VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome to the VanWee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 WBOB. To be part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Now here are your hosts at the VanWee Financial Hour, Steve and Adam VanWee.
It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here on this rather chilly Saturday morning. It's a little unusual for this time of year, but it's been absolutely delightful so far, and it'll be hot soon, so we're not complaining. But it's a good day to sit around and listen to the whole show. So if anybody who's been a regular for all these years, just try to hang on and tell all your friends. And if you're one of the people who has a friend who is a listener and told you, then try to stick around for the hour, and we promise you, you'll always learn something here. And I don't think we've ever disappointed on that.
Hope not.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, there's a lot going on, and there's always a lot going on. We know that. But the biggest thing that's going on today is I forgot all my notes at home, so I'm just going to wing it. Yeah. If you don't ask me something that's easy so I can't get you a real answer, then I'll just make something up.
Yeah, what he's really saying is please call the show because he's got nothing to talk about.
That's a cheap way to do that. I'll take it. It would be a really good day to call for all those reasons and more. But don't worry, there's plenty to be said.
Yeah, there sure is.
This was saved by the bell week.
Yeah, well, kind of. Now, I don't know if saved by the bell is appropriate, more because usually that's when it's going down and then the bell rings and it stops going
too.
Down. So
you look at it that way?
Saved by the Friday week, yeah. For sure.
That was some rally.
It was a very strong rally, and it lasted right into the close on Friday, which was nice, because it was going to be a pretty bad week if we hadn't seen
it
that.
Bad enough the way it was.
Yeah, I don't know if bad. It was mildly bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But not terrible.
An exclamation point of 500 some points in the Dow.
Yeah,
pretty good stuff.
Well, and then the 220 or 230 on the Nasdaq.
Didn't hurt. Nasdaq didn't quite crawl out of its hole, but it's sure scaring it now.
It did for the week, actually.
Well, I know it was up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We got to get into new bull market territory. It's got just a little to go.
Yeah, but it did increase 0.1%. So not much, but it wasn't down.
Up was up.
Yep. The Dow was off about 400 points, 1.2%. Really not. I mean, again, the week wasn't that bad because of Friday. And then the S&P was off 33 points or 0.8%. So sort of that 1% territory on two of the indexes and then slightly up on the other one. I'll take it, considering everything that went on this week. We kind of warned you last week that this week was going to be volatile. You get a Fed meeting and you just know it's going to happen. And then on Monday, we got the news that First Republic Bank was seized by banking regulators and being sold to J.P. Morgan at a fire sale price. And you just knew we were going to offer a fun week at that point. So, and we didn't disappoint.
No.
Interestingly, despite the news on First Republic, the data that came out this week showed that First Republic was actually somewhat of an outlier and that regional banks are actually in pretty good shape and getting better. In fact, week over week, bank deposits increased by $21 billion and loans increased by $29 billion. Banks that are facing a liquidity crisis don't typically offer loans like that. So seeing that growth on the loan side, to me, says that banks are feeling better about their own futures than maybe Wall Street is feeling about their futures. And in this case, hopefully the banks know a bit more about their own situation than investors. But we'll see what happens from here. I'm not super worried about it. I mean, it's definitely on my radar as something, a mild concern, but the First Republic thing, again, it does seem like somewhat of an outlier. So we'll see what happens.
It does. There's a lot yet to be worried about. And then as it has been for so many months now, it's confusing because there's good news and bad news in equal quantities. And you think the Fed, for the first time in its 110-year history, could pull out a soft landing?
No. I mean, I guess at some point it will happen in history, but I don't know if they can do it this time or not.
The old blind pig finds an occasional acorn thing?
Yeah. None of this stopped the regional bank index from pretty much collapsing during the week, although it did rally with the market on Friday. I think it was up around 5%. So it saved it from being down double digits for the week, but it was still a pretty large single-digit loss.
Yeah. I don't want to invest in the financial sector yet, and yet this might be just a really good opportunity.
It does look, I don't know, maybe
it's tempting. A tough call these days.
Yeah, for sure. The NASDAQ, as I mentioned, was the only major index that stayed in the green this week. And a lot of what weighed on companies was worries about a recession. Even more volatile than the banking index was the drop in natural gas once again this week. It lost 12% of its value.
It was really irritating me.
And that's coming off a quarter in the last quarter where it lost 55% of its value. So not a great week or not a great year to be invested in natural gas. The energy sector overall was off 5.7% just this week. It was by far the worst performing sector of the S&P. Financials, which dominated the headlines, were off just 2.6%. And then technology, healthcare, and utilities all posted slight gains. International stocks were also mixed, with Hong Kong being the biggest loser, down 1%. Brazil, Italy, and Japan all gained more than 1%. Overall, the international index was up about 40 basis points for the week. Gold and silver both posted nice gains and are both up solidly year to date. The bond market was pretty mixed, with short and medium term ETFs, bond ETFs rallied a bit, and longer ETFs dropped a bit. So a real mix. And if you're following interest rates, you're seeing pretty wild swings at all points in the yield curve, and they're not uniform. So you're seeing some go up, some parts of the yield curve are falling. It's been really, bond traders are trying to figure out what's going on. And I think there's a lot of uncertainty around that right now.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I want to spend some time today talking about bonds. It's been a wild ride for them. And getting back to normal requires a bit of an understanding about a balanced portfolio. And I fear that what's been going on in bonds over the last year or two has made a balanced portfolio something that most people are fearing more than using.
Well, I mean, I think a balanced portfolio is still the right way to go, but that balance might not be the same as it was pre-pandemic.
Right. Well, and obviously these days there's more cash, CDs, money markets, liquidity things in there that are paying. So you used to have to put bonds in to get that. So it's a whole different outlook on investing than it was the last, 3 years?
Yeah, and in some ways it's better, and in some ways it's a lot worse. There's way more uncertainty around the stock side to me, but on the bond side, having that guaranteed 5% income is just a blessing for a portfolio manager.
Absolutely.
It makes our job so much easier.
Absolutely.
So
we are eternally grateful.
Absolutely. But it was really painful to get here. So,
all right, we will have a trivia question after the break, and we'll talk about hopefully some things that you all want to talk about. So just pick up the phone. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. And we'll put you right to the head of the class and talk about your preferences, priorities, fears, and whatever's on your mind. Hardly anything you can't relate to money if you give it just a few seconds to develop. So we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3 WVOB. To be part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can reach Ken at 904-636-7888. And today's question is brought to you by Adam.
Yeah. So if you're familiar with college savings plans called a 529, they're offered by just about every state, but it's a very common misconception that you can only buy in the state that you're in. That is not true. You can buy any state's 529 plan, and there are several states that are offered that have, every year they survey all of these different plans and take a look at the fees and expenses, and there are several states that routinely make the top five or top 10 for being the cheapest with the best investment options, and those states logically should be getting the bulk of the deposits, but that's not necessarily what happens. $400 billion in assets have gone into 529 plans over the last years, and that's what their current balances are. But a 2023 study found that two-thirds of assets under management are parked in expensive home state plans that don't offer offsetting tax benefits. On a cumulative basis, how much are investors in these plans leaving on the table? Or another way of saying wasting.
Yeah, and I'll give you a hint. Think big.
Yep. So $400 billion in assets. Mm-hmm. How much are investors in those plans wasting by investing in the wrong plans?
Yeah, in fact, over the years, we've found that one of the big misconceptions about college saving in general, but specifically 529s, is that somehow you get a tax break. They are not deductible for federal purposes. You can, however, deduct 100% of money you put into the Florida plan on your Florida income taxes because you don't have any.
Right.
But yeah. People who live in tax states, many of them, can actually take a look at that, and many can get a deduction. You have to weigh some things like that against the possibility that perhaps there are plans that are outperforming and have lesser cost. So later in the show, when we give the answer to that or when somebody hits it, we'll give you a really good place to go if you're starting to shop 529 plans. I should also mention that we are advisors on at least one of those plans.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, we can deal with the Schwab plan, too, once the transition is made.
Right.
But there's one that we are actually registered as advisors, which is a service we offer that we do not charge for.
If you're a client for other reasons. Yeah.
No, otherwise, rip a wallet out of your back pocket and keep it. How's that?
All right.
Okay. Where do we want to begin? You want to finish up on a few things on the market, which is,
yeah,
I think,
want to
a
talk
good
about
idea.
The quarter point rate hike that happened this week, for better or for worse. Yeah. In the Fed's statement, they changed their wording and they didn't indicate that rate hikes were over, but they did raise the bar to make future rate hikes more difficult. So I think there's a good chance of a pause at the next meeting, but it's definitely not a guarantee. The market has a different opinion than the Fed. They have shifted to pricing in even more rate cuts at the second half of the year. Hard to believe, but they're pricing in 3 to 4 rate cuts by the end of this year. That's very contrary to what Powell is saying.
That's right, and it's very optimistic.
Well, or is it pessimistic? Because
that's a good point.
That would mean a pretty decent recession, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's difficult when you get around to some of these financial terms where you have to remember that bad news is good news and good news is bad news sometimes, and then it's the other way around other times.
But the real dilemma facing investors right now is who's right, the collective wisdom of the market or the guy who actually controls the decisions? And they're at odds.
They are indeed at odds. Over time, the big brain, the collective market, has been pretty darn accurate.
It really is. And the Fed has been pretty inaccurate. So
about a 99% positive on one side and a zero on the other one.
Yeah.
But still.
But the one guy has all the power. So
yeah.
I don't know.
And
I
can't imagine what would lead people to believe that there would be multiple rate cuts this year.
Recession is what.
Well, that's the only thing, yeah. And yet we can't say for sure that that's happening either.
Well,
although the signs are pointing to it,
but not the earnings are definitely not pointing to it right now.
No, but the beat rates are good.
That's what I mean. The earnings are not pointing to a recession.
Oh, no. Exactly.
Earnings season has exceeded expectations by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah, 70% for earnings and 70.7 for revenues. We all know these are reduced expectations.
But that's how earnings work.
Exactly.
So more companies are raising forward guidance than lowering, too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that changed since last Saturday.
Yeah, it was even last week, and this week we had a bunch more come out with positive guidance. I don't know. It's kind of bizarre.
It really is. And, you know, normally, we're pretty definitive about things like this because, you know, you just look at all the data and you put it together and up comes an answer. Not this year.
Nope. But everything post-COVID has been so crazy, so it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought. How long will it take to level COVID out of all the things in the market?
Oh, man, I don't think we're – I think maybe 5 years. I mean, I think after 3 years we're getting there. In fact, some of the employment data just returned to pre-COVID levels.
Right.
So I'll talk about that now. That was my next topic anyway.
Yeah, let's get into that because there's a couple things that are very intriguing in there.
There was a ton of jobs data this week, just an absolute ton.
Much of it misunderstood.
Yeah, and some of it better than expected, some of it worse than expected, some showing.
This is a recording.
Yeah. The JOLTS report definitely showed a deteriorating picture of employment. That's the Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey. It was released on Monday. Layoffs are definitely on an uptrend. That I don't think that will surprise anyone because we keep hearing about large companies doing layoffs. Hiring rates have also slowed over the last few months, and that's one area we're now back to pre-COVID levels, which that is fine. It's if we go past pre-COVID levels and start getting into real bad territory, that will concern me. Quit rates have basically fallen back to pre-COVID levels as well. And quit rates are a weird thing. Quit rates mean that people are finding better jobs. And so the higher the quit rate, the better the economy typically. So we're seeing quit rates come down. So that's a sign of a weakening economy. It's an unusual indicator in that way. The job openings are down 20% year over year from about 12 million to about 9 million. Mm-hmm. So that's a bit concerning as well, where those 3 million jobs, I don't know if they got filled or just disappeared or taken off the, I don't know. They're gone.
And with layoffs happening all year in the tens of thousands at a time, that's got to be factored in there somehow, and yet it's difficult.
So then we flash over to the employment situation report released on Friday, and that was much better news. Total unemployment hit the lowest level in 70 years, and Black Americans are now unemployed at the lowest rate ever, 4.7%, and the difference between the overall unemployment rate and the Black unemployment rate hit the lowest gap that it's ever had. Yeah. So that's great news. Additionally, wages rose at an almost 6% rate, which sounded like good news, but it will also make the Fed think twice about what they're going to do on the next rate hike. So it's one of those catch-22 situations. We also saw the ADP payrolls report. It came in hotter than expected on Wednesday, and then the Friday non-farm payrolls, the headline number also came in hotter than expected. But underneath the surface on the non-farm payrolls, there was a bunch of revisions to previous reports, which I think 147,000 jobs that were previously counted disappeared in this report, and it brought the headline number way under the forecast.
104.
Yeah, if you add them together, it was way below. So
that was not, I read how many headlines yesterday and today about the super hot market, job market and all that. That was not a super hot report.
It wasn't.
And neither was the household survey, which was, I think, 139, which is actually, if you look at the 104 and 139, they sort of belie the ADP number at 236. I like it better when you can reconcile these things, and I can't reconcile those.
Yeah, the ADP report doesn't usually match up with the other report, though. It's sometimes they match. Yeah. Sometimes they're wildly different.
And, of course, their pools, not only the pools of people, but the methodologies are differing among all the surveys. So usually, you know, we talk about this once in a while too, because we have an arbitrary cutoff 12 times a year called the end of the month. 1 month is almost meaningless, except in a directional sense, but an actual quantitative sense is very difficult to derive anything out of there that looks like a logical conclusion. But it isn't as good as people are complaining about. And obviously, again, the market understands that, because otherwise, what would have driven this success?
I'll be curious to see the small business report, optimism report this month, because
it's been a tanking.
Yeah, well, it's been tanking, but the biggest problems have been labor related for quite a while now, since COVID. I'm wondering if those will start to ease now.
Did you see the biggest number of all? And I don't mean in magnitude, the most important number of all, or the most confusing or whatever on the household survey report? 43,000 people left the workforce last month. Believe that? And Sarah was telling me this morning, apparently there are a lot of Black Americans walking away from their jobs too, and that's creating that very, very low number. So there's a little more to go, and we have to pay some bills, so don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder that the lines are still open, 904-222-8255. Adam is going to repeat the trivia question in just a moment, but I want to once again remind people out there that if you care about who's running the city that you live in, you had better get out to vote.
I did it yesterday. Good. It took all of about 90 seconds.
And Duval is very flexible about where you vote if you're voting early, right?
Early, you can go to any of the early voting locations. They're all listed on the website. I went to the Beaches Library, and I was in and out of there so fast. It was there was no line. It's great.
Well, you have never, in my history around here, and I don't live in Duval County, as you know, but everybody on the First Coast has to watch what happens in Jacksonville. That I have never seen a time when the choices are more clear than right now.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I feel like Deegan is using name recognition, which by all means she
earned it.
She did, and she does great things in the city for sure. But she's also playing the part of a moderate Democrat, and if you
it's
go back and look at her record, and especially during the previous campaigns where she was unsuccessful, she's far left. It's really, I think, disingenuous to paint herself as a moderate when that is not the case.
And what just happened last year in Duval County, it turned Republican.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Republicans, the unelected ones, everybody knows the problems with the elected ones, but the unelected ones really care about things that go on, except they don't care enough to go out and vote. One-third of the people in Milwaukee voted. One-third of the people in Chicago voted. And in both cases, they threw away very, very important jobs and turned them over to the hard left. And I just walk away and shake my head. If you're part of the two-thirds that doesn't vote, you have absolutely no right to complain to anybody about anything.
Yeah, and you think about what we've been through in the last, since COVID, and can you imagine if we had a Democrat mayor during that time? I guarantee you schools would have been closed longer. There would have been more mask mandates. We would have been under the thumb of the Democrats, much like our fellow Floridians in Orlando and in the southeastern counties. It was awful down there, way more restrictive. We were very fortunate here to have more sane leadership, and I hope that continues.
And
the other
we voted.
The other things on the ballot, if you live at the beach, there's a 55-foot height referendum that they put on the ballot. That's for a property that's located next to Sneakers. They want to put in a multi-use development that exceeds the limit. The pro is that it has a parking garage. The con is that if they violate it once, then can they do it in the future and continue developing, or in some people's opinions, overdeveloping the beach? That's a tough one. I see both sides of that issue. So I don't know what to. I think that's just a personal preference thing.
Probably. But they love Stare Decisis, don't they? Oh, they did it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can do it too, right?
Exactly. The other one that came up on my ballot was property appraiser. There's a Republican, Jason Fisher, versus a Democrat, Joyce Morgan. I'm not sure why property appraiser needs to have a party line affiliation. It's a job that I feel like you can do without really bringing politics into it, but whatever. And then there's a city council at large that was on mine. It was Democrat named Charles Garrison and a Republican named Chris Miller. Don't know much about them, but that was all. There was only four things that I got to.
Yeah, well, there you might. That might be one of those classic cases where you default to a party line vote,
perhaps,
not knowing better.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's what I did.
But like I said, under 40%, then you absolutely do not have a leg to stand on to complain about giving your city away to the left. So
no, exactly.
Just me, not just me.
But most importantly,
my opinion.
Just get out and vote. That's the best thing
exactly.
You can do.
Yeah, and I'm speaking to everybody. Vote your preference.
Yeah.
You know what my preferences are, and you know how I would vote if I could. You know how Adam did vote because he could. But go vote. It just keeps me constantly flummoxed why so few people turn out.
I don't know. Especially in these off-cycle elections.
Oh, yeah.
This is it makes voter turnout just dramatically falls during these things. And it's so easy. Just swing by on your way home. Yeah. It's really not a big deal.
If you're driving down the road and it says vote here, and it's not election day yet, but you're in Duval County, then you can vote there. Just pull in and get it done. Get out. Boom.
All right, let's get back to the trivia question.
Yep.
Bad college savings habits. 529 college plans have accumulated over $400 billion in assets. But a recent survey found that a bunch of people put their assets in their home state plan when it is not cost effective or tax effective to do so. How many billions are left on the table by these parents saving money for their kids' future by putting it in the wrong plan?
And as I said, think big, and Adam just gave you how big clue? Billions.
It starts with a B.
Yep. That's still a bunch of money where I come from.
No doubt about it.
If you do just a little bit of research, you can find out so much stuff. And with today's internet, it just makes it so easy. But why throw your perfectly good money at a cause that you believe in, like educating your children, without trying to do it, maybe not the optimal way, but a better way? Or worst case, you get and do the research and find out that what you're doing is good.
Mm-hmm.
So that would at least make me feel better, too. Again, behavior, very strange. Can you do the millionaire in 5 minutes, or you want to start?
I'll do that next segment.
Okay.
I think it'd be better. But, yeah, I do have another millionaire segment, and it's a good one. I think you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, well, he was filling me in a little bit, and it's very good. All right, let's talk about bonds a little bit. Here's something Adam and I hear just relentlessly in the office, and sometimes with existing clients and sometimes with potential clients, and you never know. I hate bonds. If you were in this business for any length of time and you meet any number of people, you're going to hear over and over, I hate bonds. Well, I know why, partly anyway. In good times, which are most of the years in the market are pretty good times, your overall return comes from the stocks and the bonds and the cash. But the outsized part of that is in the stocks, because the market tends to outpace bonds. The stocks tend to outpace bonds. So people look at that and they salivate, of course, and then you want to do more and more and more stocks and less and less and less bonds, because bonds are boring and they hate them. But really the problem, the underlying problem there, is knowledge. If people understood bonds better, then they would understand why and become friendly with them in their portfolios. I'm doing a right now on our website, VanWeeFinancial.com, V-A-N-W-I-E Financial.com. Thank you, George, for reminding me. And if you go to the blog section, we click the little hamburger up in the upper right, and it says blogs, and go there. The one that was posted this week is part one of the bonds, and it's called, ready for this? I Hate Bonds. So there you go.
Yep.
Now, this week, I'll have this one posted no later than Wednesday, and this one's a little bit different. It's kind of a takeoff on Dr. Strangelove. Learn to love the bond. How's that? Like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the problem is you won't like the bonds unless you understand what's most likely to happen and the reason that they are there. Now, if you look at a 60-40 portfolio, 60% stocks and 40% bonds, over a long period of time, that return is about 7% annually. And it doesn't have a great big amount of volatility that'll scare people to death. Now, last year, a 60-40 had, but I can say the weirdest year in our lives, can I? Because I think it was for a 60-40.
Oh, absolutely.
It was about a 15% loss. Now, the reason the bonds are in there, partly, is to offset stocks. So if stocks are having a bad run, the bonds are floating along, paying you bond coupon money and maybe going up a little bit as money flows out of stocks and flows into the bonds. Well, that didn't happen last year because of a whole set of weird circumstances. But so far, year to date, in at least for the first 4 months of 2023, the 60-40 has returned 4.69%. Now, if we could annualize that to 12 months, this would be a year that we would all absolutely love. So it is working again. You no longer have to eschew the bonds, although having more cash than the straight 60-40 is also a good idea this year. But you have to understand some of the workings of bonds. And one of the main ones is bond duration. What does that mean? It means how long until the day the bond issuer is going to pay you back the face value of the bond. Now, that comes in everything from very short to 30 years. There are some 50-year in perpetuity things out there, but we're not going to even discuss those. They're so rare. But what happens when the time between now and the bond duration, or when the payback comes, the value of the underlying bond changes more with interest rates than do the short duration bonds. And remember this one, we always call it the old teeter-totter effect. Bond prices and interest rates move in opposite directions, like a seesaw. So if interest rates have been going up lately, as they have so often this year, then bond prices have been falling. Well, when it reverses, it's going to make everything a little bit different. So whereas you had pretty good reason to be bond shy for several months so far this year, looking at it now with the inflection point probably being reached in interest rates, now's a good time to start thinking about adding bonds back in. And we have a few suggestions on that one coming up too. So Adam will do the millionaire and we'll wrap up on bonds and see what happens right after the break. This is the VanWee Financial Hour.
Once again, here's Stephen and Adam VanWee.
Welcome back to the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And the trivia question is still open, which I'll have Adam repeat for you.
How much money is wasted every year in 529, or no, cumulatively in 529 plans because people invest in their home state plan when it is not the most efficient way to do so?
Yep. And as always, there will be a moral to this story.
Yep, for sure.
I like them. All right. Those of you who have been loyal listeners for a long time have heard many episodes of Adam's, what we'd call, self-made millionaire. Well,
this
who
is
am
the,
I?
The 22nd one I've done.
Wow.
So, yeah, this is, it's just, it's a segment I've done. I've picked a bunch of people who have become millionaires who came from very humble beginnings.
The American dream.
Exactly. And there's a big narrative out there right now that this isn't possible in today's America. And it's just not. It's so wrong.
There is a lot of narrative going around, and the more you listen to it, the worse off you're going to be.
America has made more millionaires than any other country in the world, and it's not even close.
And in honor of Bernie Sanders, millionaires and billionaires.
That too.
Because he can hardly say one word on it.
That is true. So anyways, here we go. This black woman was born in the Baruch House, a New York City housing project. I probably butchered that name. I apologize.
I'm not real familiar with New Yorkese either.
Not really either. It's a New York City housing project. And she was born in 1958 to Panamanian immigrants. After her birth, her parents separated and she was raised by her mother. In order to support her education, her mother operated a home daycare and took cleaning jobs on the side. She used this extra money to pay for Cathedral High School, a Roman Catholic college prep school. Her daughter excelled in math, so she attended the Polytechnical Institute of New York, the university in Brooklyn, where she received a degree in mechanical engineering. She then began pursuing a master's degree in mechanical engineering from Columbia. Around this time, she joined the Xerox company as a summer intern, which paid for part of her tuition. She received her degree in 1981, and then she joined Xerox full-time in their product development department. She was loyal to Xerox and began to work her way up through the ranks. In 1990, Wayland Hicks, a senior executive of the company, offered her a role as his executive assistant. After 9 months, she became executive assistant to the chairman and the chief executive, Paul Allaire. She did these jobs so well that in 1999, she was named the Vice President of Global Manufacturing. From an executive assistant to the Vice President of Global Manufacturing, that's pretty cool. In 2000, she was promoted to Senior Vice President of Strategic Services. In this role, she began working closely with another woman, Anne Mulcahy, I probably butchered that one too, who would soon become CEO of Xerox. 2 years later, she was promoted to President of Business Group Operations. In 2007, she assumed the role of president of Xerox, and then in 2009, she was named CEO, succeeding Mulcahy. This would mark the first time that a black woman held the title of CEO at a Fortune 500 company. During her tenure, she led the acquisition of Affiliated Computer Services and split the company into two separate companies, Xerox and Conduent Incorporated. She also held the title of chairman of the board after Mulcahy resigned that position in 2010. She held both of these positions until she stepped down in 2016. Stepping down from Xerox didn't mean that she was done with the boardroom. She remains on the boards of American Express, ExxonMobil, Datto, Nestle, Uber, and served in the past on the boards of Boston Scientific, the University of Rochester, the MIT Corporation, along with many others. Jeez. She has been a passionate advocate of getting children to learn more STEM subjects in school. She served on Obama's National STEM Program from 2009 to 2016. She provides leadership counsel to multiple nonprofits, including FIRST, National Academy Foundation, MET, and the U.S. Olympic Committee. She helped found Change the Equation, which focuses on improving STEM education in the U.S. She's delivered a commencement address to many colleges, including Xavier, Howard, Williams College, and Georgetown. From her humble roots in the projects of New York to a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and being named the 29th most powerful woman in the world in 2015, Ursula Burns is the epitome of the American dream. Pretty cool.
Is that the epitome?
Whatever.
It's his accent.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is the American dream,
yeah.
Period.
Housing projects to Fortune 500 CEO.
A long, long time ago when your mom and I told you to get a mechanical engineering degree, proves to be a pretty good idea, doesn't it?
Yeah. I'm not the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, though.
Well, CEO of a somewhat smaller entity.
Yeah, somewhat smaller entity. That's right.
You know, having that kind of understanding of the sciences, the math and science and so on, it's not for everyone to practice mechanical engineering. People who love it, but most people, you want to get those kind of skills. I equate it to the advice that many of us give to people. Go to law school. Get a law degree. Don't practice law. Well, don't practice mechanical engineering either. It's just things that really help you. Good morning, Lane.
How are you doing?
Wonderful. You?
I'm a mechanical engineer. Life is good.
See? And here he is, living the good thing.
That's right. When I went down to look into my master's, I talked to the white-haired old prof, and he says, go down to that business school and get an MBA.
Smart guy.
Best advice. Okay. Bernard Baruch was organizational genius. He was made his money in the stock market and then served presidents in World War One and Two in organizing this nation's industrial response. And that's where he made his fame. So that's what that housing project was named after.
Very interesting. I did not know that.
So you're going to tell us what the best state is to invest our college fund.
Well, one of them. It's not a clear number one, but it's in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But let's say I invest in that, and let's assume for the moment it's not Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But I want my kid to go to UCF or UF.
Not
Can
a problem.
Can I get that money and use it in Florida?
100%. It does not matter what state it is. What state holds the money? All they do is hold the money in the 529, and it is there for you to use as you wish.
Mm-hmm. Outstanding. I think that'll help your listeners because I think it's lack of research. You know, the parents go for the easy grab.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure.
And so anyway. That was my contribution.
Yeah, actually, the one that we like, and this has nothing to do with the answer to the question, the one that we like and the one that we use the most is the Utah plan, which website is my529.org.
Yep, and the reason we use it, it's consistently rated in the top five, top 10 for low fees, great investment choices, ease of use, great customer service. And we can say that pretty confidently because we deal with them pretty often and have done our homework comparing plans.
Yeah, and it seems like an opportune time to discuss a lot of things about it. But Utah I wouldn't exactly call it a conservative investment. It's actually probably got more choice and better options than most of them that you might think would be more high flying or whatever. But Utah is just a really solid plan, and it has an advisor network that we're part of it. And Sarah and I have had our grandchildren in it forever. And then when Adam and Jess started having babies, they put them on it right away. And it adds up.
I've never put more than $100 a month into the plans, and they've both grown substantially.
It's really remarkable.
It's kind of surprising how large they are.
You know, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, nice.
It's a lot easier to make money when the tax man stays out of your business, isn't it?
That is true.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Well, you gentlemen are the best, the absolute best professionals, and it's always fun talking with you.
Well, you're very kind.
Did you want to guess at the trivia today, Lane? You always do.
Oh, sure.
Oh, my gosh. I have no clue. No, I'll just wait for the answer.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, we'll give it out in just a moment here. So keep your radio on. Okay.
Take care.
See you later. Bye. Yeah, it's close enough now. We're just a couple minutes away. So let's talk about how much people leave on the table.
Yeah, so the answer is actually $37 billion. Billion dollars by choosing the wrong 529 plan. And that's really just unacceptable. That's such a large percentage of the 400 billion in assets and 37 billion wasted. That's terrible. Just do a little bit of homework and make sure that you're investing in the right plan, because there are some plans out there that are set up by states that they make all the money and you don't get the return. This is for your kid's college. You're just shooting yourself in the foot, because that's money you're going to have to come out of pocket for.
Yeah, and it's got another side of the same coin there. It says, I want all the money that's possible to be removed from the government.
That too.
And into the pockets and accounts of Americans and investors everywhere. If you can, there is no better way to make money than to save taxes. There's no quicker, better, and more legal way. And these are not loopholes. In fact, one of the things I'll get at next week is a discussion on some of the ways that we have to look at fixing Medicare and Social Security, and some of the incorrect use of the term loophole by several members of those folks who go to work inside the Beltway. It's a constant irritation to me. Well, all right, we got to run. It goes quickly. Thanks for listening. We'll be here same time next week. This is the Banway Financial Hour, signing off.
AM 600 WBOP Jacksonville 101.1 FM W2